Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
You know, we won New Hampshire three times now, three. We win it every time. We win the primary, we win the generals, we've won it, and it's a very, very special place to me. It's very important.
Donald Trump wins New Hampshire. Nikki Haley vows to fight on. Then should Trump be barred from running for president for his role in the January 6th attack on the Capitol? Or is taking Trump off the ballot an anti-democratic measure that'll only energize his base? We host a debate. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Former President Donald Trump won the Republican primary in New Hampshire, defeating former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who once served as Trump's U.N. ambassador. Trump won by about 11 percentage points. He got 54.5% of the vote. Haley received about 43%. On Tuesday night, Nikki Haley vowed to stay in the race.
Well, I have news for all of them. Woo! New Hampshire is first in the nation. It is not the last in the nation. This race is far from over.
During his victory speech, Donald Trump stood alongside two of his former rivals, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott and Vivek Ramaswamy. Trump called Haley an imposter and falsely claimed he'd won the general election in New Hampshire twice before, even though he lost to Hillary Clinton in 2016 and to Joe Biden in 2020.
This is a great, great state. You know, we won New Hampshire three times now, three. We win it every time. We win the primary, we win the generals, we've won it, and it's a very, very special place to me. It's very important.
With his victory on Tuesday, Trump becomes the first non-incumbent Republican candidate to win both the Iowa caucus and New Hampshire primary in the modern era as he moves closer to a rematch with President Joe Biden in November. Biden wasn't on the ballot in New Hampshire's Democratic primary, but he still won the state as a write-in candidate. Biden didn't run in the primary after New Hampshire refused a request by the Democratic National Committee to move its primary until after South Carolina's. Biden's final vote count is still being tallied. Congressmember Dean Phillips placed second with about 20% of the vote. Marianne Williamson placed third with about 5%. You can see our interview with her at democracynow.org. We'll have more on the primary. We'll be going to New Hampshire after headlines. Israel's killed at least 210 Palestinians in Gaza over the past 24 hours as it intensifies its bombardment of the city of Khan Yunis. Israel's issued new evacuation orders to over 500,000 Palestinians in Khan Yunis, where many had sought refuge from Israel's attacks in the northern Gaza Strip. On Tuesday, at least six Palestinians died when a missile hit one of the UN's largest shelters in Khan Yunis. The British news outlet, ITV, filmed Israeli forces fatally shooting a Palestinian man in Gaza shortly after he gave an interview about trying to help others evacuate to a safe area. The shocking footage shows Ramzi Abu Salul shot as he stood with several other men, one carrying a white flag. This is part of ITV's report, beginning with the words of Ramzi Abu Salul.
The Israelis came to us and told us to evacuate, but they didn't let my brother out. We want to go and try to get them, God willing.
The interview complete, our cameraman walked away. And then this happened. The interviewee had been shot and fatally wounded. You can see them place their flag on his chest. As he was carried away, the white flag was turning red.
At the United Nations, Secretary General Antonio Guterres reiterated his call for a Gaza ceasefire.
The entire population of Gaza is enduring destruction at a scale and speed without parallel in recent history. Nothing can justify the collective punishment of the Palestinian people.
The UN Secretary General went on to criticize statements by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other Israeli leaders opposing a two-state solution.
Last week's clear and repeated rejection of the two-state solution at the highest level of the Israeli government is unacceptable. This refusal and the denial of the right to statehood to the Palestinian people would indefinitely prolong a conflict that has become a major threat to global peace and security.
Guterres' comments came as the Wall Street Journal reports a group of five Arab countries have proposed a plan to end the war in Gaza and create a pathway toward a Palestinian state. As part of the deal, Saudi Arabia would also recognize the State of Israel. Israel's revealed more details about how 21 Israeli soldiers died in a single incident in Gaza Monday. The IDF says the reservists were planting explosive mines to blow up two buildings in eastern Gaza. During a firefight, Hamas militants hit one of the mines, setting off a chain reaction that toppled the buildings with Israeli troops trapped inside. Israel says the buildings were being leveled to create a so-called buffer zone in eastern Gaza. The Intercept reports this appears to be the first time the Israeli military has publicly admitted that it's systematically destroying whole areas of Gaza with the intent of depopulating the area. President Biden traveled to Virginia Tuesday for a campaign rally focused on abortion rights. Biden's speech was interrupted at least 13 times by protesters calling for him to support a ceasefire in Gaza. One protester screamed out, "Genocide, Joe, how many kids have you killed today?"
Sit down.
The New York Police Department has launched an investigation after pro-Palestinian students at Columbia University were sprayed on Friday with a hazardous, foul-smelling chemical during a campus protest. Eight students were hospitalized. The group Students for Justice in Palestine has alleged the chemical attack was carried out by two students who are former members of the Israeli military. No arrests have yet been made. The U.S. military's carried out strikes inside both Yemen and Iraq as fears of a regional war in the Middle East grow. In Iraq, the U.S. hit three sites connected to a militia with ties to Iran. Iraq's national security advisor, Qasem al-Araji, condemned the attack, saying, quote, "The U.S. should pile on pressure for a halt to the Israeli offensive in Gaza rather than targeting and bombing the bases of an Iraqi national body," unquote. Meanwhile, the U.S. bombed Yemen again earlier today, targeting what officials described as Houthi anti-ship missiles. This comes as Houthi forces continue to target commercial ships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden as part of a campaign to pressure Israel to halt its assault on Gaza. A Russian transport plane reportedly carrying 65 Ukrainian prisoners of war has crashed in Russia's Belgorod region near Ukraine. According to Russian media, all 74 people on board died. Russia's foreign ministry has accused Ukraine of downing the military plane but provided no evidence. Ukraine said it's investigating what happened and has accused Russia of, quote, carrying out special information operations directed against Ukraine. The crash comes a day after at least 18 Ukrainians were killed and 130 were injured as Russia fired a barrage of missiles at several cities, including Kyiv and Kharkiv. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said 130 residential buildings were struck in the attacks Tuesday. In other news from Europe, Sweden's now a step closer to joining the NATO military alliance. On Tuesday, the Turkish parliament voted to finally approve Sweden's membership. This leaves Hungary as the only country remaining that needs to approve Sweden's accession. This comes as 90,000 troops from the United States and other NATO nations are preparing to take part in NATO's largest military drills since the Cold War. The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists is warning the world remains as close to global annihilation as ever before. The Bulletin has announced its doomsday clock remains at 90 seconds before midnight, where it was first set for the first time last year. Princeton University professor Alex Glaser spoke Tuesday.
When we set the clock last year, there were major concerns that nuclear weapons could be used in Ukraine. And today's clock setting was still overshadowed by the war in Ukraine, but also the war in Gaza, which has caused enormous human suffering and could lead to a broader conflict in the region involving several nuclear weapon states and regional powers.
A U.S. federal appeals court revived a $10 billion lawsuit filed by the Mexican government against U.S. gun makers. In 2021, Mexico sued six gun manufacturers, including Glock and Smith & Wesson, for aiding and abetting the unlawful transfer of hundreds of thousands of guns annually into Mexico, helping to fuel drug cartel violence. Mexico estimates 70% of the guns trafficked into Mexico come from the United States. In related news, Mexico's calling on the Biden administration to investigate how drug cartels are increasingly obtaining U.S. military-grade weapons, including rocket launchers, grenades, and belt-fed machine guns. The Los Angeles Times has laid off about 115 journalists, slashing the size of its newsroom by 20%. Many of those who lost their jobs were journalists of color, including Jean Guerrero, who was the only Latina columnist for the opinion desk. The paper also laid off its only reporters who focus on covering Black and Asian communities in Southern California. The layoffs are the largest at the L.A. Times since billionaire Patrick Soon-Chung bought the paper in 2018. In other media news, Time magazine's laid off 30 journalists. That's 15% of its unionized editorial staff. Meanwhile, the Baltimore Sun is in a state of turmoil after it was recently purchased by David Smith, the chair of the right-wing news network Sinclair. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, former President Donald Trump won New Hampshire's primary on Tuesday by over 11 percentage points, a vote of 54%, defeating former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley, who got 43%. Haley was the last major challenger to Trump after Florida Governor Ron DeSantis ended his presidential bid Sunday night and threw his support to Trump. Trump is the first non-incumbent Republican presidential candidate to win races in both Iowa and New Hampshire since both states began leading the election calendar in 1976. In his victory speech Tuesday, Trump criticized Nikki Haley for losing New Hampshire and vowed he would beat President Biden in November.
We've won almost every single poll in the last 3 months against crooked Joe Biden, almost every poll. And she doesn't win those polls. And she doesn't win those. This is not your typical victory speech, but let's not have somebody take a victory when she had a very bad night. She had a very bad night.
Nikki Haley will pass on the Nevada caucuses February 8th and put all her efforts and millions of dollars into ad buys for February 24th primary in her home state of South Carolina. In her concession speech last night in New Hampshire, she vowed to continue her campaign.
New Hampshire is first in the nation. It is not the last in the nation. This race is far from over. There are dozens of states left to go. the next one is my sweet state of South Carolina.
On the Democratic side, President Joe Biden won his party's primary, but did so as a write-in candidate. He didn't campaign or appear on the ballot after the Democratic National Committee, supported by Biden, voted to start its primary season next month in South Carolina. New Hampshire state government, controlled by Republicans, would not comply with the DNC's new rules and scheduled the primary for last night. As a result, Biden did not win any delegates from New Hampshire. His final vote count is still being tallied. Congressmember Dean Phillips came second with about 20% of the vote, with Marianne Williamson placing third with about 5%. For more, we're joined by Arne Arnesen, longtime radio and talk show host in New Hampshire, former New Hampshire legislator and Democratic gubernatorial candidate in the 92 elections. She's the host of The Attitude on WNHN-FM in Concord, New Hampshire. Arne, welcome back to Democracy Now! I think you were our first guest in 1996 when we were covering the New Hampshire primary.
Don't tell anyone. It's aging both of us. And I've been covering presidential politics with you, Amy, for such a long time as well. So thank you for having me back.
If you can first respond to Trump's win, the significance of that, and also explain how the New Hampshire primary works with independents, with Republicans. He got something like three-quarters of the Republican vote. But I think Nikki Haley beat him when it came to independents.
So we're such a quirky place. We actually have a law in New Hampshire, and that law was actually written in 1975, that the New Hampshire primary has to come 1 week before any other primary in the country. So when the Democrats, for example, decided to go to South Carolina, we couldn't change the law. The law said we have to have a primary, and the primary was yesterday. Republicans kept the same calendar, so therefore Republicans had an official primary, and the Democrats had an unofficial primary. But the law was we were going to have a primary by hook or by crook. We couldn't change it. The Republicans controlled the governor's office, the House, the Senate. They weren't going to rewrite the law. It was beneficial to them, the Republicans. So again, that's one of the reasons why Donald Trump had the only official primary and there was a write-in for Joe Biden. So now let me also explain something else. There are sort of three groups in New Hampshire, Republicans, Democrats, and something called undeclareds. Undeclareds are actually the largest registered group in New Hampshire. They're over 40%. And as a result of the undeclareds in New Hampshire, if there is a election, undeclareds in the primary have a choice. They can pick up a Democratic ballot or they can pick up a Republican ballot on the day of the primary. There was no reason to pick up a Democratic ballot because what's the point? You were writing in Joe Biden. It wasn't going to be recognized by the DNC. So the motivation for them, all the motivation, was to pick a Republican ballot. Now the question is, what were they going to do when they picked it up? They really only had two choices. They had Nikki, who is, I describe her as MAGA polite, or they had MAGA. In the other words, they had Donald Trump. And a lot of them basically were sort of, there was no way they could support Donald Trump. There were Republicans, maybe. There were conservatives, maybe, or even something moderate. But Donald Trump was so offensive to them that there was no way they were going to do it. So Nikki benefited from those undeclareds having nowhere to go on the Democratic side. And the only place they could go to exercise the franchise, for the most part, was on the Republican ballot. And that's one of the reasons why she was so successful with these undeclared, more moderate voters. And of course, Donald Trump was able to clean up with what? The conservative Republican base, because Republicans today are MAGA Republicans. They're not Republicans, they're MAGA Republicans. She was trying to somehow convince the small number left of more traditional Republicans and then grab those undeclareds and say, now vote for me. But Amy, there's something that's really important here. She lost by 11 percentage points. Everyone says she may still have a future. There's some way to go. This state was designed for Nikki Haley. If there was a state she could win in the entire United States, it was this state, and she still lost by 11 points. Can I explain to you why I say this? I just posted this on Facebook. I want you to hear it. She had everything in her political backpack, and she still lost. Why? She had great weather, unlike what you saw in Iowa. She had an affable political windsock named Chris Sununu, my governor, who basically was attached at her hip and gave actually probably more speeches than Nikki did and was more positive about her election than even she was. She had Koch money. The Koch network decided in December that they were going to pick Nikki to support. So starting in December, they were pouring millions and millions of dollars into her campaign, money she did not have, but they were able to do it. The Americans for Prosperity have been, which is the Koch network, has been operating in New Hampshire for decades. They knew the state. They knew what kind of mailers to do. They knew where to bring people out, and they spent millions on her. She also, as I just mentioned, had the undeclared only having one choice to vote in the GOP primary. She had no Democratic primary of consequence because it was a write-in. And then last but not least, this is really important. What is New Hampshire? We are a highly educated, rich, white state that doesn't go to church. Okay. I mean, compared to Iowa, we are probably the second least church state in the country. And when you look at all those pieces, Amy, she should have won. She should have won, but she still could not win. What does that tell you? She doesn't have a future. The only future she has isn't whether he's a convicted felon, because even she said she would vote for him if he was the nominee, if he was a convicted felon. She's obviously looking at the fact that he's probably not the healthiest man on the planet, and therefore she wants to be the person second in command in case he falls apart. And if he does, she'll say, look, I've been here. I survived so much. Maybe I should be your nominee.
Well, Arnie, I wanted to ask you about Joe Biden's role here. You wrote in a piece for The Raw Story that, quote, by attempting to make South Carolina the first in the nation Democratic primary in 2024 was one of the biggest political blunders in your decades-long time in public service. Why do you think that?
Okay, so I don't think that New Hampshire should be a prima donna and should be assumed to go first. Let me just say that, okay? I've always said that. But this was not the time to make the switch. And the reason is that in 2028, give it to somebody else. But because it was Donald Trump, because there's such a pervasion of lies, that meant that if it was going to be a Joe Biden, you couldn't cede Iowa, you shouldn't cede New Hampshire to just a Republican conversation that was going to be covered nationally and internationally and over again. It's bad enough that Trump has an echo chamber everywhere. But then in some ways, Joe Biden gave him an even bigger echo chamber because there was no Democratic conversation in either Iowa and New Hampshire. And even if you thought people were running against Donald Trump, whether it was Ron DeSantis, whether it was Vivek, whether it was Nikki, they never touched Trump. So they all touched Biden. So all the negativity about why they should be the next candidate for the Republicans was not about that they should defeat Trump, is that they were defeating Biden. So to a large extent, he ceded them the playing ground. He allowed them to continue the lies, the distortion of the economy, the ideas about the border. All those things became the headlines and nothing about what he had accomplished, who he was, even the conversation about abortion. Now it's the third rail for Republicans, but they basically did not have another voice. And so by deciding to go to South Carolina, it was a yawn. Nobody's going to be focusing on that. It's assumed he's going to win. He doesn't gain anything with South Carolina, but he would have gained something by having another message coming out of Iowa, coming out of New Hampshire, as they were focusing on what the choice would be in 2024 for president. It was a stupid political mistake. That doesn't mean that we should always be first, but not in 2024 with Trump running for president again. This is a threat to democracy. This is an invitation to fascism. We could look at a country that we will not recognize after the November election. God forbid Trump wins.
And what were you able to see in terms of Trump expanding his base in New Hampshire compared to previous elections in which he's run?
Did he expand his base? His base are Republicans. His base are MAGA. He doesn't expand his base. But frankly, if he's going to win the nomination for the he doesn't need to. In this state, perhaps he might have needed to, but he couldn't accomplish it. That's part of the problem. I mean, I describe Nikki Haley as democracy light. Why? Because she is one of those individuals that said that actually Joe Biden won in 2020. In order to be a good Republican, you have to say that Joe Biden did not win in 2020. But she said that Joe Biden won in 2020. But then what does she say? But if Donald Trump is a convicted felon and he happens to get the nomination, I'll still vote for him. So part of the problem right now is if you don't buy into the lie that Joe Biden isn't legit, you can't be a Republican anymore. And if you actually believe that Joe Biden is the president of the United States, then that's where you would expand your base. But he can't expand his base because he demands the following that follows him in his cult to say, Joe Biden is illegitimate. I am actually your president and I am the one to win because I will be your retribution. That's what he's about. And every time Amy says, well, chaos follows Donald Trump, guess what? That's what Donald Trump loves. He loves the chaos. He flourishes in the chaos. And when people kept saying, well, he didn't debate, for example, he didn't debate this whole time, Donald Trump. Yes, he did. You know where he debated? He debated in front of judges, and that's what he debated. He loves being in a New York courtroom because he'd rather debate a judge than debate anyone about whether he should be the nominee for president.
Arnie Arneson, when he called Haley an imposter, he falsely claimed he'd won the general election vote in New Hampshire in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. He didn't. She did. And in 2020 with Joe Biden, he won New Hampshire. Trump didn't. As he continued that lie.
Amy, you're acting like facts have meaning. I mean, with Donald Trump, I mean, what everyone kept saying that, remember when he said the comment about he mixed up Nancy Pelosi and Nikki Haley about what happened on January 6th? He didn't mix it up. I hate to break it to you. That wasn't his senior moment. That was intentional. Because now what he's doing is he's sort of doing this mail merge so that now Nikki is Nancy Pelosi. Now Nikki is Hillary Clinton. Now Nikki is anyone who's actually taken him on and maybe defeated him. Now Nikki becomes that person. The cult doesn't care about the facts. You can say to him, but oh, Donald Trump, you lost. No, he never loses. And the base that follows him believes he never loses. So you and I are focused on numbers. We're focused on votes. We're focused on facts. That is basically not an essential requirement for people that support Donald Trump. They don't need facts. They just need him.
Arnie Arneson, I want to thank you for being with us. Longtime radio and TV host in New Hampshire, host of The Attitude on WNHN-FM in Concord, New Hampshire, former New Hampshire legislator and Democratic gubernatorial candidate in the 92 elections. We will stay in New Hampshire next up and speak with journalist Jeff Charlotte. He's a Dartmouth professor in Hanover, New Hampshire, and author of The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. Stay with us. By New Hampshire's Eris Drew. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Donald Trump beat Nikki Haley by 11 percentage points in New Hampshire, despite nearly half the electorate being comprised of independent voters. Haley won 6 of 10 independents on Tuesday, but she lost three-quarters of Republicans. According to the Associated Press, Trump was backed by Republicans who prioritize immigration and held a slight advantage among those prioritizing the economy, the two top issues among GOP voters in New Hampshire and Iowa. For more, we go to Hanover, New Hampshire. We're joined by award-winning journalist, professor, author Jeff Charlotte. He teaches English and creative writing at Dartmouth College. He's the author of The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. Jeff, welcome back to Democracy Now! Why don't you start off by responding